Welcome to Sports Girls Podcast, brought to you by sportstalk.ie. Our podcast will be available every Monday covering the 2019 ladies football and camogie seasons. You can find our podcast on all online platforms by searching Sports Girls Podcast. Stay tuned to Sports Talk this year via the hashtag GAA Family as we continue our promotion of hurling, football and camogie. Welcome to this week's Sports Girls Podcast. I'm Denise O'Flaherty and joining me this evening is former All-Ireland winning Mayo captain Diana O'Hara, and we have Tipperary's Aisling Maloney. Now everyone should know about Aisling's football talents, but last weekend against Cork she scored a remarkable 2-9, and in that tally she scored an exceptional goal. So I look forward to chatting to Aisling later on about that goal and just about life in general. So what we normally do now at this stage is actually we'll go through the weekend's games. Galway, Diane, had a great win over Mayo in Castlebar on Saturday night in Division 1. Peter Lee, though, has given Mayo players a chance, you know, bringing on so many new players and giving them an opportunity.
Yeah, it was a great game, and everyone that said it was probably the game of the day, because the Mayo men and Galway men were playing afterwards. You know, Mayo, in fairness, they're developing a panel, I guess, after, you know, the exit of players last year. And they've got in probably over a dozen players that never even represented the county at underage. So I think in terms of development, they're really going, they're making great strides. They're only 6 points from Galway, you know, by the way that the game ended yesterday. But, you know, when you look at it, the fact that they've tried 35 players over the league, I mean, it just goes to show that all that chopping and changing hasn't really affected their performance. So it's really, really strong in terms of development. Galway are as strong as ever. Like, their forwards are firing on all cylinders. They played a really good sweeper system. And, you know, how they use the sweeper on the open flanks worked very well against Mayo, but they seemed to catch on to it in the second half. The one thing I will say, though, for all of the games in Division 1 and in all of the divisions, it's credit to the players. Conditions this weekend were horrendous, yeah, with gale force winds and the rain and soft pitches. But, you know, most of them got to be played off. But, yeah, the Mayo and Galway game was excellent, actually.
Also, on a Saturday evening, we had Donegal and Tipperary in Division 1. Aisling, great credit to you, as Diane said, for actually playing the game. Must have been horrendous conditions. Just 2 points in the end.
Yeah, I suppose, look, it was 2 points in the end, but I suppose Tipperary can be kind of happy with their performance going up. I suppose they're missing five of the girls who have started with us against Cork. But I suppose Donegal are an amazing effort. Obviously, they're top of Division 1 league table this year. So going up there, a lovely five-hour journey up that day. But it was great. It was great to come that close. And I suppose, look, if luck turned our way in the day, we could have come away with a win. But credit to Donegal, they're an excellent side.
Yeah, because you can see it now at the top. It's tight there. You've got Donegal and obviously Galway, the two unbeaten sides. Also in Division 2, and you know these teams yourself, Aisling, Armagh made it 4 wins from 4 with a 3-point win over Tyrone. And it looks as if Armagh will more than likely get promoted.
Yeah, and it's actually quite interesting looking back at Cavan from last year, they've been in the final the last 3 years, I think. And it's amazing to think how you would think Cavan will be there again this year, for instance, and Kerry are back down, relegated Division 2 as well, and I would have expected them to be up there as well. So it just goes to show the quality that is in Division 2 and how hard it is to get out of it. But yeah, I know they're shaping up nicely. I'm looking at the top of the table.
Yeah, Diane, then on Sunday, Cork got back to winning ways. They had a very good win over Monaghan, 5-17-1-4. Monaghan have a new manager in there, and I suppose for him it's kind of getting his own stamp on things. And then Dublin, as expected, beat Westmeath 5 points in it in the end.
Yeah, like Dublin have, you know, it seems like they've got their full panel back and have them named as on the panel as well for these games. So they're looking to finish very strongly in the league and assure themselves of a semi-final and final position. You know, Westmeath will struggle against a team like Dublin, but the other side of that is it was quite low scoring, so the conditions had a huge impact on the game on the day. And you know, there's only 5 points in it, so Westmeath will probably take something very positive from that as well. Monaghan, on the other hand, you know, they're having a tough time this campaign, and I don't believe Cork have their Mourne Abbey players back yet. But to score 5-17, you know, in any type of conditions, you know, it's obviously very tough for Monaghan to get the ball out. But it's probably a game again of two halves, and it just looks like Cork are really trying to set themselves up. Like the Mayo and Cork game would be really important as well in terms of points on the table.
Exactly.
To try and reach a semi-final, because, you know, both are under pressure to win all their last games.
In Division 2, Ashton, you already alluded to Cavan. They were defeated by Waterford by a point. A lot of new players, Ashton Sheridan was in last week, and she was saying to us that, you know, the average age of their forward line is 20. They've lost a lot of players. So I suppose for them, it's a bit like yourselves. They're building on something.
Yeah, I suppose it's brilliant to see, really, that both Cavan and Waterford, I'm aware, they have lost a lot of players from last year. But I suppose credit their management as well, because you kind of can't continue on with the same players playing the whole time. So I feel like they're kind of taking the opportunity this league to Cavanagh to bring on their younger players and give them a bit of experience. But it's early days yet as well. I'm not sure. I don't think they've won one game yet. But sure, there's still 3 weekends left for them there to grasp the win.
Yeah, exactly. Then 2 games were called off in Division 2, Clare and Laois and Wexford and Kerry. Division 3, I was at this game myself. Meath had a very good win over Longford. Longford can take a lot of positives out of this game, but Meath, just Diane, played some fantastic football, and it's no surprise that they're favourites to come out of that. I'll go through the other results then. Sligo defeated Wicklow by 7 points, Roscommon beat Down, and then Kildare and Offaly were postponed.
Yeah, like Sligo seemed to be building very nicely the whole way. Like Wicklow are a very good side, and Sligo are doing better week on week, it seems, and they're getting good results. And I'd say they'd be definitely looking for a final position. Roscommon and Down, you know, Down had to travel to that game. Down are still developing, you know, year on year as well, and they'll be just looking for improvement, you know, before they go into Championship. Roscommon, you know, scoring 1-7 again. That's Roscommon seem to be getting a trademark goals in all of their games, so. They also look to be improving, and I'd say, like, along with them, you know, you'll have Meath in the top of the table. Like Meath will, you know, they scored 5-12 against Longford, yeah. But as you say, Longford scoring 1-12, yeah. You know, Meath are scoring, well, goals win games, as you know, we often say, but you know, with the 4 goals just being the difference, it's 4 kicks of a ball, and yeah. You know, when someone can kind of protect their goal that little bit better, it puts other teams in a position where they have to try and score the points. And then from the Longford side, and on Meath's side, alternatively, you're looking at the fact that, you know, those 13 scores scored against Meath. And Meath seem to be letting as many scores through as they are actually taking them the other end. So, it's going to be very interesting, but Meath look by far the strongest team in that division. They should win it.
Good news for Longford as well, Diane, and a player that you know well. Jacinta Brady is back with the county, and she scored 2 fantastic points. You know what Jacinta can do.
Yeah, like... And, you know, Longford are just developing, really. You could say they've, you know, they've, with Enda Sheridan in there, they've done a whole load of rejigging, you know, out, you know, canvassing the clubs to get players in and then to develop them from there. They're making huge strides. And Cynthia Brady, sure, she'll run all day for them, in fairness. I'm imagining that she was midfield because there's nowhere else you'd put her. And to be scoring points as well from play from midfield, because she's not a free taker, it just shows now that she's going to be a player to watch, you know, throughout the rest of this league.
Yeah, in Division 4, Derry scored, I know it was against Kilkenny, but Derry scored 4-28 against Kilkenny. Kilkenny won 8, but 4-28 is a fantastic score to put up.
Yeah, it's incredible. I would feel, you know, sorry for the keeper in defence, you know, from the opposition. You know, what do they have to do to try and get the ball out? And sometimes with the conditions, players are trying to kick a ball in the breeze and God knows whatever else, and you really just have to carry it and break the tackles. But what a score to put up. Like Derry are really doing very, very well. But like no more than Antrim, I think, in the same division against Limerick, they scored 4-8.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're really getting in there on top of goals, on top of the keeper for goals, opportunities, and some fine scores put up like in that division.
Yeah, and it's all new for Leitrim as well, Aisling, a new manager in there, Gavin Cawley, after what happened last year. It's great to see Leitrim back. Beaten by a goal again yesterday, Fermanagh beat them, and I suppose, you know, for Gavin, it's just getting that win and getting a bit of a run together.
Yeah, I suppose, look, for any manager getting into a new team, it's kind of just getting the team together in the first year. I suppose you kind of wouldn't be planning to want to win too much and just get the kind of atmosphere going good in the camp and stuff like that. So, look, they're moving in the upper direction, losing to Fermanagh by a goal. So there's only a kick of a ball in it, really. So I suppose there's a lot of positives they can take from that going forward. But no, great credit due to Gavin Cawley getting involved in this year as well and getting things back on track up there.
Yeah, because you probably know Gavin from his time with DCU. And then in another game, Louth and Carlow, which would have been a cracking game, that was called off due to the weather. Now, Aisling, it's fantastic to have you on the podcast this evening. I mentioned your goal earlier. Come on, was it a fluke? Or please tell me that you were meant to do that.
No, it wasn't. I didn't mean to. It kind of, the ball came in and it just, whatever way I hit the ball in, so I'm going into the back of the net. So, no, credit due to Bree Conlon for kicking the ball. In fairness, the ball that she kicked in was nearly peach perfect. You couldn't draw it if it happened. But no, look, the ball came in and I just said I'd have a chance off it. Took my chance and luckily went into the back of the net. So
it's an awful pity that Gaelic goals aren't in the running for the Puskas Awards, because remember Stephanie Roach's goal, the internet was catapulted that and got her into the final three for that goal. You know, we could have got your goal. Did you see it, Diane? Jerome Quinn, for anyone who wants to see it, recorded it.
I'd say there's thousands of people, and I'd be saying to Ashley and send Jerome a quick text and say cheers for that, buddy, because you're on a public forum giving Breed all the, I suppose, plaudits for sending such an inch-perfect passing, which is incredible as well. But, like, from watching it myself, you know, and you probably always say, like, luck happens when talent meets hard work. And, I mean, there's not many players that would pull it off. And I'd almost certainly say that you meant to do it. You may not have exactly meant to go, but I would say you knew what you were doing by trying to...
Would you have tried it now,
off.
Diane, something
it,
like that?
Our Shrive scored... I couldn't tell you how many of those to me. Like an money.
But there was no cameras around that time. Sorry.
That's the problem. Yeah, that was me. Like, so that's what I was saying. You know, it's great. Like, even looking at it now, the amount of social media, having Earsport, TG Cahir, having Jerome, Facebook Live games streaming, like, it's absolutely incredible what's happening. And if you weren't at that game, you'd have never have gotten to see it. And that's like a magic moment in ladies football that I would imagine that they'll be putting up on, you know, presentations throughout the year, because it was spectacular, that goal.
I love how laid back you are about it all.
I suppose looking back at it myself, it looked well for everyone else. Like, looking back and saying it turned out and it looked well, but I suppose it happened in the right moment of the game for us, and yeah, it was perfect time there, and I think we were about 5 points or 6 points down at that time, so it ended up being a good score in the end. But I don't know, I'm actually getting so much slagging from it now, so I don't know if it was worth it in the end, the slagging I'm getting going around with it. But look, it was brilliant. At the end of the day, we got a goal, and it was a plus size for us in Tipperary. And I suppose, you know, these things happen, and it was a fluke on the day. And credit to Bree Conlon for giving in such a good ball into me. She hadn't done that, probably the goal wouldn't have been gone in. So I have to give the credit to her for the ball that she passed in.
How are you finding life in Division 1? In all fairness, now you've made this fantastic run in the last couple of years, Division 3, Division 2, and now playing Division 1 football with the top teams in Ireland.
Yeah, I suppose it's been a very kind of a surreal run, really, going from Division 3 to Division 2, to an intermediate, and then going to Division 2, and now we see ourselves up in Division 1 playing intermediate. So it's been quite an exciting run, but... Yeah, no, we're loving it. We're loving the challenge as a team together. I suppose we're playing against some of the best teams and players in the country. And look, our aim this year is to try to stay up in Division 1. And if that happens, well and good. And if it doesn't, look, we'll recoup and get ourselves together again. But personally, I'm really enjoying the challenge. I just love playing against the best teams in the country. And I suppose it's the only way you're going to improve your own footballing skills as well, as a player and as a person. So it's really exciting.
And for you guys, Aisling, like, you know, as we know, you came up through the divisions fairly quickly, like from Division 3 to 2 into 1 straight away. And like, you know, as a group, did you do that by, you know, saying to yourselves, okay, right, we need to get out of this division, that's our goal at the start of the league? Or, you know, did your manager play all his, I suppose, more familiar top players during that time to do it? Or how did you do that? Because I know, like, you could make two choices. Play all your top players that you're familiar with and you know will give you what you want, or actually incorporate new players in to develop them along the way? Or how did you get the balance right to be so successful?
I suppose the Division 3, our manager probably took that approach in playing probably his best team. Division 2 then, look, everything, I describe it as a very kind of a cool bunch. We kind of don't expect anything too big, and if we win, it's kind of like on to the next game. We don't really think about anything. and it's kind of a roller coaster year for the league for us last year in Division 2. But I suppose, look, last year we started using different players and giving people a chance, and I suppose that helped us going forward into the senior championship this year. And even, for instance, now at the weekend, he gave everyone a run. He left five of our starting players at home, and he brought it on everyone and gave everyone a chance. And I think that's the only way that you're going to progress forward as a team and challenge different teams and better teams. There's no point putting out your same team every week, because eventually it's going to come to an end. Players get older, players get injured, and eventually it's going to all come to a halt. So I think it's really important for managers to give the younger players a chance and give them experience. And the league is the right time to do it. Like, I know everyone wants to win the league and they don't want to be relegated, but it's a perfect opportunity to give your younger players the experience.
Last year was a strange year for you when you think of it. The high of beating Cavan in that Division 2 final, 7 day Armorad, and it was a great game of football. And then Cavan got the revenge in the cruelest of ways by relegating you to intermediate football.
Yeah, look, I suppose it went from such a high to such a low all of a sudden. Considering we were kind of quiet, although we lost our senior games during the summer, we were quite happy with how we did. We ran most of them to about 5 points, which we were quite happy for our first year of senior, but we ended up facing Cavan then in a relegation battle, and have to get our hats off to them and fair play to them. We were up 9 points half time, they brought it back and won it, so they deserve to be up there in senior as well. And it's a pity to see, probably people might be disappointed that Tipperary are gone back down, but look, that's the look of the draw. If we were good enough, we would have stayed up. Clearly, we weren't good enough, so I suppose we just have to deal with the cards we're dealt with now. But I suppose it was a bit of a lull at the end of the year after our run and being so happy with it and then having to go down. But look, these things happen. We'll recoup this year and concentrate maybe now on staying up in Division 1, hopefully, and then look at the Munster Championship and try to have a crack off that.
Yeah, because I was going to say to you, with Division 1 and with Shane giving so many players their opportunity in Division 1, he's probably looking at long term, and it is the summer and obviously the Munster Championship first and the intermediate.
Yeah, look, I suppose at the minute he's kind of a manager who only kind of takes one match at a time. He doesn't look too far ahead.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's why we kind of, as a group, are the same. We have the same mentality. We only take one game at a time. We don't look too far ahead. I suppose coming back down from senior last year, people might think, oh, Tipperary, you know, they should be in the All-Ireland final. We have no right to be back in the All-Ireland final. You know, we have to win our Munster first and beat teams here in Munster, and then whatever comes after that for us is a plus. So at the minute, we haven't even been looking forward to a championship. We're looking at a league, hoping to stay up and get the best performances we can in each game. And then after that, then we look forward to our first round of our Munster championship and try to get a win there and take things from there and see where it takes us.
If you're looking at what teams that you would be keeping an eye on in intermediate championship, who would you be tipping right now to be very, very strong potential opponent?
I think Clare and Munster are always, they always put up a great battle. They're always quite strong. But I suppose you have to give credit due to Meath being there last year. I think they're definitely contenders for the All-Ireland this year. So I suppose everyone's looking out for them and in the intermediate championship and keeping an eye on them and what they're doing. So I think out of everyone, I think Meath are the ones who watch out for.
Do you know any of the Meath players then from DCU?
I do, yeah. I play with Aveen Cleary and Vicky Wall. It's Gas. We'd be slagging each other in training and stuff, but it's only a bit of friendly ranting now. I wouldn't be anything too harsh. But I know they're great, they're excellent. Like, they're brilliant players, Aveen and Vicky. They're brilliant players. Not only are they brilliant players, they're brilliant people off the field as well. So it's nice that college environment brings that. You know, you end up playing with people one day and you're playing against them the next day. It's strange, but I suppose that's how it is, and I suppose it makes it all more exciting.
Speaking of former players, but she'll be back for you, Ashley McCarthy, your Tipperary teammate, making a real name for herself in Australia. A lot of people have actually said it to me, because you would be classed, and we're not just saying it, myself and Diane would say it, as one of the top players in Ireland. Would you consider going down under? I know you're still young yourself and you probably have lots of plans, but would you consider going down playing football in Australia?
Yeah, look, to be honest, I have been in contact with people over there and they have been on to me about it. But to be honest, I actually have no real interest in it at the minute. I'm still 2 years after college, so I kind of want to get that done and out of the way first before I go over there. But in an overall kind of picture, I don't really have much interest. Things are so exciting here back in Tip at the minute. with underage and stuff coming through, I'm kind of, it's maybe like a drug, you can't really leave it that easy. But yeah, no, definitely, maybe when college is over and stuff like that, I might take a look into it. But for the moment, for the next 3 or 4 years anyway, I don't really have much interest.
According to Sarah Rowe, I think you need to be able to do press-ups for your fitness assessment, actually. So,
she lets the cat out of the bag anyway, Laura. She's told a good few stories about me now that got me in trouble. But my press-ups now are coming along nicely.
And all you've done in 2017 to get onto the field to console her, and this is what she does to you.
I know, Sarah, yeah, it's terrible. Terrible.
Yeah, there was something mentioned as well about Aisling's inability to lift a weight.
Yeah, no, actually, there's a story behind that. Our strength and conditioning coach actually tipped this year. We do a test, obviously, at the start of the year. And one of them was a push-up test. And I was like, oh, God, like, I knew in my head I could barely do half. But I said, I'll try to do one. So anyway, I went down and I did one press-up. And he was like, you're joking me. And I was like, no, I'm not. This is, I actually can't do them. So he set a standard for me then. He wants me to be 2 now for my next one. So that was about 3 or 4 months ago, and I only tried in the gym the other night with the girls, and I still couldn't do one. So I'd say that's progressing quite well anyway. Getting an awful zagging inside and training, it's brilliant.
Oh my God, you know, and we thought, Diane, that she was like Supergirl, and look at now,
yeah,
you've got flaws, Aisling, you've got flaws.
But this is the thing, like maybe all of this strength conditioning and all of this nutrition diet, all this stuff, maybe it's not all it's cracked up to be either.
True.
So, you know, when, let's say we compare Aisling, she'd be in the top 5 players in the country. Like, when you're looking at that and she's, you know, in a position where she can turn around and say that, no, I'm not so mad for the push-ups and so on and so forth. Like,
but she has her past and chicken and all that. Yeah, Aisling, yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. No chocolate bars or chippers or Chinese. But just elaborate on what Dan said there. I suppose, like, I actually was on holidays there with Aisling Desmond, and she was laughing at me. She was going to the gym and she was like, are you going to come to the gym? And I, like, in my head, I was like, jeekers, I don't even know where to start inside in the gym. Like, well, how do you even squat? Like, what do you post on the squat bar? What even is a squat bar? But she was laughing at me, being like, are you coming to the gym? And I said, no, I don't really do the gym. Like, she started laughing at me. But I suppose the way I think of that is, like, not that I don't believe in it, but I think everyone's to their own. Everyone has their own way of kind of preparing and what they believe in. And it's not that I don't believe in nutrition. Like, I don't grab any chippers out every day this week, but it's not that I don't believe in it. I suppose I just kind of know what kind of suits me and what suits my body. And I suppose everyone's themselves. Like, I know some of my friends will be going to gym nearly every day of the week, and I look at them being like, you're nuts, like. But then they're looking at me being like, you're crazy. You're not even doing anything, like. But
I suppose whatever it works for you, doesn't it?
I wouldn't say it works now. I don't know. I'd say I'll end up getting a fright one of these days. But like at the minute, I don't feel my body's able for it. If I had to do some of the training that I know my friends are doing, I know that my body wouldn't be able to live up for it. But I suppose your body has to get used to it as well. My body hasn't been put to that yet. But I know in years to come now, when the old days start kicking in, maybe like yourselves, you know, you have to get out and you know, I'll have to get out that squat bar and start learning how to squat and lift a few weights. But at the minute, I'm not too concerned about it.
Can you go on to Sarah now and find out if she's any more stories on Aisling after that dig she had at us?
Well, just after that dig from Aisling, like, you know, from Sarah's experience with living with her in college, I think when we talk about the fright that one player can give another in terms of, you know, how obsessed they are about football and prep for it and, you know, all their diet, nutrition, and so on and so forth. I think Sarah Rowe got the shock of her life when she saw that one of Aisling's pre-match meals the night before was a Chinese, and another day she was cooking dinner for herself, and it was a bag of frozen peas on a pan. So,
yeah, but she hangs me out to dry that one. Can't get
she might be right. I'm sure
you No, actually, the first time I met Sarah, actually, we were living in the house, we're kind of in the same apartment, and she came over and she's like kind of looking in, I wonder what, like, expecting to see a big stir fry or something, or I don't know, some curry dish or something. She's like, I wonder what you're cooking there. So she came on over to me anyway, and she looked into the pan, and here I was flinging the peas like over and back, and she just burst out laughing, and she was like, you're not well, you're one of a kind. But yeah, I suppose, look, it's gas. Like, they'd be heading off to training and I'd be sitting there with my McDonald's and stuff, but I don't do it. It's only occasional now. I don't do it the whole time around.
All
so
right.
just to get that out there.
Yeah, because I was trying to know what your whole pre-match routine is like, you know, Do you actually listen to music before a game? Because I know the way you go by certain dressing rooms and some of the music, you're kind of going, oh, mother of God, where did they get this? Do you do anything like that before a game?
My pre-match kind of routine is kind of very strange. It's probably the way I put it. My breakfast consists of probably Weetabix. No matter what time of the day the match is on, it could be 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock. It has to be Weetabix. And it's not even that I have to have Weetabix. That's just my breakfast every day anyway. I just have a Weetabix and I feel like I get a stitch if I eat any time after that. So that's what my breakfast will consist of. And I suppose before matches, I don't like being surrounded by seriousness. I like to have the crack, even in the warmth and stuff. I like to be laughing and stuff, because I know if I get too serious about the game, then I end up getting caught up in nerves and all. And I suppose, look, I grew up through secondary school kind of being hard on myself. When you're younger, you kind of go out every day in a game and you kind of play well, and then comes this day where you play bad and you don't know how to deal with it. So I suppose through secondary school, I kind of learned and kind of had my brain channeled to, in order for me to not get nervous about games and stuff like that, I kind of have to, like, remove myself from a certain environment. So if I'm in the dressing beforehand and if it's too serious for me, or, like, if people are being too jittery for me, I know I have to get out of there. So often all I do is go into the physio and laugh away and have the chat with the physio about the current news and stuff like that. But, look, I suppose everyone has different ways of dealing with their pre-match routine, but for me, definitely, I don't like taking things too seriously. Everything with me is kind of a laugh and a joke, even the warmth and stuff like that. So that's how I would do it anyway.
Is that something that you would actually advise some young players, you know, what you're saying, don't be so hard on yourself? Because I find even in underage games, and, you know, we're meant to say it's a sport and it's meant to be fun games and that, but, you know, youngsters can put an awful lot of pressure on themselves.
Yeah, and, like, I suppose that's what I did when I was younger, as I was growing up. I put an awful, like, it's your own self-pressure that you're putting on yourself, no one else. And I suppose people, like, often when I was growing up, I used to worry about what I did in a game, or, like, if I played bad, I used to be thinking about that for weeks afterwards. And eventually I knew how to channel my brain, because it was getting to me too much. And then I began to realise that, look, sport is a hobby. I'm playing it for enjoyment. I'm not playing it to crucify myself or torture after a game of what I did bad or what I did good, or if I should have done that or could have done that. The famous words, shoulda, coulda, woulda, as I say, after a game. But look, I suppose I went through years of actually kind of 2 or 3 years maybe being very hard and critical on myself. And I just kind of think, what's the point? Like, if after a game, if you do something wrong, you look back, it's the past. There's nothing you can do about it. If you're in the game and you make a mistake, if it's 5 minutes into the game, you have 55 minutes to make up for it. The next ball that comes in, and I suppose you can make up after the game then, if you're looking back at your mistakes, you can think forward to next weekend and try correct that mistake. So I suppose in terms of that, if I ever do something poorly in the game or I'm not happy with my performance, I leave it at the dressing room. I go into the dressing room, I think about it for 2 minutes, and I'm like, that's done now, pass next weekend and move on, because there's no point whatsoever in reflecting back on it, because it's getting nowhere. It's negative thoughts in your head, creating a negative mood then going forward into the week, whether it's work or whatever you're doing. Like, sport affects your mood outside of sport. Like, so you go into work and you can be moody after playing a bad game. So I suppose there's much more, like, things surrounding life other than sport. Yeah, like, it's amazing. We all play it. We enjoy it. Like, big massive part of who I am in life and stuff. But I suppose, like, at the end of the day, if you make a mistake in a game, you can't just rewind it and go back and change it. So what I say to young players is just, nerves and stuff like that. I used to hate the saying in a dressing room beforehand, if a manager ever said, if you don't have nerves, you don't care. And I was sitting there and I was like, I don't have nerves in my head. I was saying to myself, but I fully care about this game. So I suppose I think nerves and stuff like that can just cause a lot of self-pressure and stuff like that. And reflecting on games after matches and all, I think you should just leave it at the dressing room and move forward and be positive for the following game next week.
I'd love to be at that, because there's times when I've been so hard myself, even in match reports and that. And Diane, I know yourself, there's times when you have said to me about games and you've been hard on yourselves, and it's something that we have to get out of. We have to get that out of ourselves, of being hard on ourselves. As Aisling said, you know, just that's it, move on.
Yeah, like what I suppose experienced from my side as a coach, and I suppose having been a player before, obviously you do your own worst critic, like you absolutely are, and And, you know, just what we've often talked about, it's like as a coach or a manager, like when you've made a decision, you, no matter what it is, you'll tend to get criticism from parents, from family, from clubs, everyone, if you've lost. If you won, they probably feel they don't have, yeah, you know, anything to stand on in terms of blaming you because you've won. And, like, it just shows, like, that, you know, what Aisling is saying there, it's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need the pressure. It's a game. You play it for fun. And, like, no matter what happens, everyone makes mistakes. But, like, probably we'll always say, like, as coaches or managers, like, you just control the controllables. But the one thing that I like, even want to know from that is, Aisling, like, you know, do you just play for fun? Or, like, what motivates you? Is it family, community, club, like, the girls on your panel? Like, what are the things that you do it for?
Well, I suppose just elaborating something what you said there, Diane, I suppose just one thing, like you can go out one week and you can play a good game and you're the best girl in the world or the best boy in the world, and you go out the next week and you play a bad game and you're the worst in the world. So the way I look at it is I think you're only as good as your last game. Like,
yeah.
So if you play well the next day you go out, like, you're not a robot. You can't play well every day of the week. So you kind of have to accept that things are going to go wrong. Like, it's life. Things go wrong in normal life, things are going to go wrong in sport, and you kind of have to accept that. But I suppose for me, what really motivates me is definitely my family. And it would have to be my two parents, my mother and my father. I suppose after winning big games, they're the first people who I look to. Obviously, it's my teammates, I'm delighted to win it with them. But the first people I want to see after a game are my parents. And I suppose seeing the emotion that they bring to games and, like, the enjoyment that they get out of me, like they're up in Donegal there at the weekend, drove 5 hours up and down just to see me play. So I suppose when I'm lacking motivation, I think of them and I think of my family, my brothers and stuff, who get such enjoyment out of me playing and stuff like that. So that's probably the main source of motivation that I get, and it definitely comes from them in particular.
Yeah, I love the way you had that attitude, and you said about your parents, and I know how much it means to you putting on that tip jersey, but the fact that you're representing your club as well.
Yeah, it's massive. Look, I think it's massive for any club really when they have county players in Kerry. We're actually lucky, we have 4 or 5 girls playing on the county team. But I suppose it's all voluntary work in the club, and
yeah,
people, the coaches and stuff who trained us from underage, they must be very proud looking on to see us playing for Tipperary now. Like, as you're younger, you don't just learn things on your own, you learn things from other people. And even now, at this age, and even going on to your 30s and stuff, if you're still playing, you're continuously learning of people around you, coaches around you, players around you, giving you tips. So it definitely is. It's, I suppose, look, Ash County, you always go back to your club, and it's where you began and it's where you started. But
Do you carpool, Aisling, then, from Kerry then to county training?
No, because our training is actually on in Kerry, so I'm only 10 minutes up the road, so it's grand.
Yeah, are you kind of happy about that, so that you don't have to put your teammates through your music choices?
Ooh.
I kind of enjoy it, to be honest. It's so close, because training on at 10 o'clock for Sunday morning for me, out of bed at 10 to 10, and away I go.
What kind of music would you have on, though?
So I'm not the usual kind of pop kind of fan. I'm actually quite a country girl. I love the country music, a bit of tip.
I know, I have to say, so yeah, well done.
Yeah, so coming home, anything, if I'm ever in a bad mood, or anyone wants to cheer me up, throw on a bit of Nathan Carter or a bit of Christy Moore, puts me in a great mood.
Looking at Derek Ryan, not even listening to him would cheer me up, I have to say.
Well, hopefully you get front row seats now for whatever country music festivals they're local to Tipperary now this year.
I know, yeah, I'll have that. And I'll go up and I'll sneak up there and sit up there.
Well, rumour has it, I'm sure Denise will talk about it after the Ladies All-Ireland 2 years ago, what sneaking you can get up to. I just have a question for you. Have you seen the, you know, the LGFA clip that they did on Breida Kelly, you know, proper fan? Have you seen that?
Oh, yes, yeah.
I think they should do one with your mum as well.
With my mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, because look at the journey she took on at the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, and actually it's quite, we flag her actually, because she never played football. Like my mum's side of the family now wouldn't be football oriented, whereas my dad's side would be very much so football oriented. But obviously myself, my brothers, my dad are very into football in Ireland, but like some days you're on the pitch so many times a week you don't really want to be there anymore. but Mam nearly would force you to go see a match if there was a match on local. Like, you can't, we actually can't take her off the field anymore. If there's any match on, be it under sixes to junior B, men's or women's, she's going to be there, like, no matter who's playing. Look, we can't, she's like a magnet these
what
days.
What's she like,
can't
though,
get
on
off
the sideline?
I think she's, I actually don't know, I don't really hear her. It's sad I always hear, but the last day I got yellow cards actually against Donegal, and I ran over anyway, running off the sideline. And there the two of them were smiling at me, being like, what did you do that for? And I was like, ah, she looked, you know, it happened. And she was laughing at me and hit me across the back and into the dugout, you know, the kind of a, there's a bit of banter there as well about it, but I know she's brilliant in fairness. And I suppose, look, I know Niamh Kelly, and I know her parents are very supportive as well of Niamh and Grace in particular. So I feel like we can relate a lot with our parents in terms of, like, there's no journey long enough for them anyway. They'll go anywhere. If it's a match done in Antarctica, they'll find some way of going there. So, yeah, but it's brilliant, true. Really. It's nice.
I'd always say it as well, that, like, that level of pride that, you know, my parents will have, that your parents, you know, have of you and the Kellys and every other player around the country. Like, that's, you know, as you said, like, from the motivational aspect, like, that's who you do it for, because you can only play for so long, and you're only going to be able to bring them that level of joy for so long. And it's just so nice to see the happiness that they have. And, you know, from an emotional aspect, I'm sure now there were tears of joy, you know, when you won the All-Ireland 2 years ago, and the pride when you went into the local national school and so on, was there?
Yeah, and I suppose Mam actually has a secret. Actually, the last year we were playing Tyrone in the league, and like, I think it was only the second round of the league, like, nothing too serious.
Well, it won't be a secret now, whatever it is.
It wasn't anything too seriously. And Mam came up to me. She normally, I know when she's crying because she's the sunglasses on the head and the sunglasses come down to hide her from her tears. Like, and I suppose I went up to her after the game and she was crying, and I was like, what are you doing? There's no need to be crying. And she was like, oh, I'm just so proud of you. And this was round two of the league last year. And I suppose after meeting them in the Ashton All-Ireland Intermediate last year, the year before, sorry, the two of them were bawling crying. And I suppose both my grandparents have passed away, like, on both sides. So they're always kind of saying to me after matches, should they start me off crying then? Being like, I just wish our parents were here to see you play and stuff like that. So I suppose it is very emotional. Like, I'm very kind of emotional side when it comes to sports. I see, like, sport is great and you love playing it. But what I look at is, like, your parents, or my parents, for instance, are, like, the community that comes to sports, the social aspect. Like, I wouldn't be talking to you on this now only for playing football. You know, the amount of people that you meet and the friends you make is absolutely amazing. And I suppose, for just as a side thing, I suppose, like, you could be sick and wherever you are, like, there's always a J community. You're always going to get around you. Fundraisers for someone who is sick or someone who is ill, like, it's much more meaningful, and there's more meanings and emotions to it other than just going out in the field and kicking a football. It's much more than that. And I suppose, like, I can never, when I'm asked these questions about my parents and stuff, I can never actually put it into words of how much, like, I adore them and how much I do it for them and play football for them to get the enjoyment out of it.
Yeah, you mentioned the friends part. Like, I would have heard of Diane and I would have saw you, Diane, but I wouldn't have known who you are until Diane came to manage Longford, and it became a kind of a professional relationship, and then it grew into friendship.
And that's what, 6 or 7 years, maybe more down the line.
And you can't get rid of me.
No, but isn't it amazing, though, like, even for instance, like, when I'm playing college football, I'm playing against girls I might have met playing Munster Interpros, or, like, maybe a blitz when we were 12, and we were getting each other's Snapchat names or something, and, you know, the way they carry on, you're going to discos and stuff like that. And how you build such a community, and it's such a small community as well.
I love the relationship you have in DCU. It just seems to, because I remember, you know, with Aisling Sheridan would have things up, and yourself, Aisling, Sarah Rowe, like, in all fairness, that's some team for DCU. But you've got this great friendship and camaraderie, and I suppose that's why you were successful with DCU.
Yeah, it was actually quite nice. Like, the four of us were living together last year. It was funny, actually. Obviously, I got a lot of flag for my antics of off-the-pitch sessions and stuff like that going to the gym. But
never. It was never your turn to cook.
No, never. I always went out to Gourmet Food Parlour, was what kept me living last year. That's where I live. But, Yeah, no, it was actually quite a nice balance as well. Like I suppose you can really, no matter where you go, you can always relate to someone who plays football.
Yeah.
There's just an automatic kind of connection there. Like if someone plays football, you're kind of, it's mean as if you know each other with 10 years and you probably only met her for 5 minutes. But I suppose it was a nice balance, you know, between me and the girls. Like, we had this rule on a Sunday evening that when we came from league matches that it was banned from talking for the week. And we actually never spoke, even though we went college training and had matches, we never spoke about football for the week. So then we were all excited again. Sure, everyone loves talking about football, let's play football. And we were all excited then coming back on Sunday after the league to start talking about football again. But yeah, no, it was very nice. And I suppose, I think the friends you make in college are your friends for life and they're your best friends. And there's a nice variety of counties there. And it's interesting when we're playing against each other now and how we deal with each other.
And at the moment then, like Aisling and, you know, I suppose Denise can vouch for this because obviously we're the Sports Girls podcast and all of the articles that Denise does with, you know, for ladies football with county and clubs all over the place, actually in schools. Like, isn't it a really exciting time to be associated with the Ladies Gaelic Football Association in,
yeah,
I suppose, what they're doing and where it's progressing to?
Yeah, it's massive. It's even in the last year or two, it's after growing massively. And I suppose the person who always stands out for me is Samantha Lambert, our captain for Tipperary. She kind of always says to us how she would love to be our age again growing up because obviously they had none of this when they were growing up. And I suppose, Diane, you can relate to it in terms of, like, even for instance, the live streaming that's happening this year. And I see that they have sports finally at all the league games. Like, that wasn't happening last year at all. It would have only been the semi final or the final. I suppose it's brilliant how fast it's going. It's going incredibly fast. And, like, even within a year, like, it makes an awful difference. Like, if you're comparing last year to this year of how the live streaming is there, like, sports filler at every game. Every time you come off your phone after a match, there's a report straight away after every match and stuff like that, keeping people really informed. But I think it's brilliant for the youngsters as well growing up, playing ladies football or whatever it is, be it Irish dancing or horse riding or whatever. I think there's an awful lot of distractions out there these days for young kids in terms of social media. Keeping up with the latest, as you know, Tommy Hilfiger coat, or sometimes you see them and they're all wearing the same clothes.
Yeah.
There's no one different. And I suppose with football, you kind of get that balance because, like, I felt as I was growing up when I was younger, I kind of always, I wouldn't say that I was different or anything, but I never really fell into that kind of following the crowd kind of thing, like this whole up-to-date kind of clothes and, you know, having the next new bag or whatever. And I suppose it's just brilliant for young girls these days that they have role models now to look up to. And I suppose with the whole 2020 campaign as well, Can't See, Can't Be, like, that's been an awful lot in terms of promotion for a lot of different sports. So it's brilliant to see, and I suppose it's only going to get better, really.
The organisation themselves, like, I was following them on Twitter during Congress this weekend, and even the CEO, Helen O'Rourke, like, during her speech, you know, they tweeted that she actually touched the players. And that's down to the games that the players are providing for the likes of us.
It's the product, Diane, it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they said that without the players and everything that they offered, there'd be no organisation and it wouldn't be going as well. Mm-hmm. So it's just, that's the likes of you, your county, your club, Aisling, like, that's, you're making this. And it's really nice to see the appreciation as well.
Yeah, and I suppose you always kind of love if it was your job playing football because you kind of enjoy it so much that you kind of don't think of those aspects, like, you know. As in, one thing you do have to do is, like, you kind of have to display a good level and standard of football in order for people to come and watch your game. And I feel like the standard of football and the skills have improved massively in the last 5 to 6 years. So people are actually seeing it as a better game. Some actually compare it to the men's and say it's a better game to watch. But I suppose, like, as us as footballers and stuff, like, we're actually just going out there doing something that we enjoy. And, like, unknown to ourselves, like, we're probably influencing ladies football and it's probably become a bigger and better sport. But as I said, I wouldn't mind getting paid for it because as my job or something like that, because we just go out and enjoy it. And I suppose at the end of the day, like, we wouldn't be here only for Helen O'Rourke and them running the organisation. All the volunteers are involved, or even yourselves here promoting the game. Like, it's absolutely brilliant to see the amount of people have got behind it and are backing it and are pushing it in the forward direction.
You mentioned a job. When you went to teaching now, would you like to be involved in the coaching? Because, you know, I love your attitude and it would be absolutely brilliant to have someone like you on the line.
On my team. I don't know now. I think I'm well able to kind of talk it off when it comes to coaching. I don't know if I can actually go preaching into practice, but it definitely is. I suppose maybe down the line I might like to get involved in a club team or a county team, or even, I suppose I get a lot of enjoyment from young kids. They like even kind of helping out in school at the minute, and I suppose when you go in on a Monday morning, you can kind of be cursing and you'd be like, oh God, Monday morning, like start the week and it's 8 o'clock and first you're back in bed, next thing you meet a youngster who is full of energy, beaming, and I suppose you get so much energy and like positive energy off them and stuff, and they excite you and they challenge you as well, they keep you on your toes. But definitely when I'm finished it all, I probably will. I'd love to get involved with a county or college team and maybe help them out in some way. I don't know how good I'd be. I'm fairly terrible, I'd say, but try, give it a try.
Actually, just tell them all your stories about your press-ups and your frozen peas and Chinese and that, you know.
It'd be hilarious trying to turn around then preaching about eating healthy and doing good gym routines, and then there was I growing up doing nothing. But
I'd be lying to them. The kids in Tipperary are doing very well in schools as well, in terms of development.
Yeah, there's a massive emphasis. I suppose the Tipperary Ladies County Board in particular are putting a massive emphasis on their underage at the minute. Because it's gone wicked exciting there the last years. I suppose when we won the Intermediate All-Ireland, there actually wasn't really that much of a hype, but after winning Division 2 now last year, the place nearly went crazy back home here in Tip, the youngsters and stuff like that. And I suppose like at our match there in when we were playing Dublin in our Finland there in Tip, the amount of youngsters at the game that wouldn't have been there last year. And I suppose, look, Loretta Clomel, after doing the double Munster Schools A final there during the week. So that's another positive thing for Tipperary Ladies football going forward. But look, I suppose I'm very passionate about zoning in on your underage and the younger girls and getting them enthusiastic about it, because at the end of the day, there's no point concentrating on your senior team or your intermediate team or your junior team. Because at the end of the day, people are going to retire, people are going to get injured, other things are going to come into play, so you're going to go travelling and you're going to rely on them younger girls then to come in and step up to the mark. So, yeah, it's exciting back home here in Tip, and it definitely is going in a positive direction.
Well, listen, it's the future, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've probably noticed it this year in particular. I feel like even looking at Mick Bohan there now, he's been, I think when we played them, they'd only 4 or 5 girls starting. And he was giving everyone else a run, and I suppose it is the future, and he realises too that he's not going to have the same 15 going out every day of the week, and he's building a massive squad there going into the championship, and a very strong squad at that. So I think it's brilliant to see, and it's brilliant that people are getting their opportunity to take the jersey, and it can only again add to the whole thing of ladies football and it becoming a better game and a better sport for everyone to watch.
Exactly. Isn't Diane, seeing that Aisling is a real competitor and she's a fantastic trainer, would you like now to have her to manage her or coach her? Football wise, yes.
Let me think about this for a while. Okay, I'd love to have her. I mean, like, from my point of view, from, I suppose, just getting to know you over the last 40 or 50 minutes, your attitude is incredible. I can see how you would bring people, inspire people, and you'd be an absolute role model no matter what way. You know, you probably don't want to hear it, but it's just a fact. Just even your attitude towards football, your motivations and why you do it, and apart from the fact of not being able to do the press-ups and stuff like that, she could probably carry buckets very well, and there's a role for that too. But I think, like, from my point of view, if, you know, God, who wouldn't want you on their team? Like, and just going outside of all that, like the talent that you have as well, and just your whole, I suppose, outlook on why you do it and what you do it for and how much you enjoy it and what you get from it. You'd be an incredible leader and role model without even realising it on any team. Anyone would love to have you.
Yeah, isn't she so modest though? I know we can have the slagging and the banter, but we're actually being serious now, Aisling.
I know now after a game, like, if I ever feel a bit down on myself after doing something poor, I'll ring Ian for a bundle of compliments.
But,
No, myself and Diane are the type of people, though, if anyone knows us, that we will say it as we see it. And it's just, isn't it? It's your attitude. I think the fact that you're so laid back and you kind of, you know, brush it all off is a great way of going out, you know, and not take things too serious. You know, you said that because in this world, you know, there is far more serious things. So, you know, sport is only a sport.
Yeah, it is only a sport. And I suppose probably where it all began for me is when I was younger. Often I've been on matches over the summer there, and you know, I've seen young girls cry, probably age 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, up to 14. And I suppose the first game I played, probably my county final, I started crying, and I came home to the wooden spoon waiting for me at the door, and I got a smack. Same things on us, I suppose, my father. And I suppose he taught me that win or lose, always go and respect the opposition and hold your head high and smile at them and don't ever take things too seriously. I think a lot of people kind of get caught up in the seriousness of it all. You know, at the end of the day, like, we're not getting paid for it. It's something that we enjoy, and people need to see the enjoyment side of it. I suppose, look, I take things very seriously in terms of when I've seen players getting criticised. For instance, Tony Kelly, a clear hurler. He probably was one of the best players in the country. Still is one of the best players in the country. He was playing with his club there 2 or 3 years ago in an All-Ireland final, and he basically scored, I don't know what, ridiculous amount every game on it. And of course, obviously, when he came to the All-Ireland final, that they double marked him. And I just said I'd look at Twitter to see what kind of things were people saying about them. And I looked at it, and I could not get over the criticism he was getting. And I was just like, this man, he's out there. He's like, it's his sport, it's his hobby, and here he is getting all his criticism. And I suppose, you know, people need to kind of, our supporters and stuff need to take a look at themselves even and be like, these people are actually humans. Like, I was looking at Jackie Terrell's documentary there and TJ Carher recently, and like, you kind of look on to these people, or even a professional, and you take Johnny Sexton, the world rugby player of the year, and you're looking at him like, just that they're getting so much criticism these days, and you're looking at him and you're like, you know what, he's unstoppable. He's getting paid, like, he should be doing everything perfect. But at the end of the day, Johnny Sexton has a brain. So does Jackie Terrell, and so does all of us.
And
Tony Kelly.
Well.
Yeah, and they have emotions. And, like, they all are human at the end of the day. They're not robots. So, like,
yeah, but
I feel
you know
like...
Yeah, old saying, though, a pat on the back is only a few inches away from a kick in the arse, so...
I know, and it's gas. And I suppose it's something, even looking at the Irish rugby and the criticism that they're getting these days, and you're kind of like... Like, just because they're getting paid, they are humans, like they have emotions, and, like, little things can bother them too, just because they are probably, he's probably at the best standard in the world, and he's probably playing his best games ever this year as well. And I suppose, I was actually, another time I was sitting in, I went to the All-Ireland semi-final, Waterford were playing Kilkenny in a replay in Semple Stadium in Turles, and I don't know if you ever heard of Austin Gleeson, he's unbelievable centre-back for Waterford. And I was standing there, and Austin took a shot from the other 65, and it just barely went wide, like there was only inches in it, and the supporters behind me, they were cursing, and they were calling him everything under the sun. And I was just shaking my head, and next thing, the next ball that came, Austin caught an amazing ball over the heads of about 5 Kilkenny players. And sure, Austin was the best man in the world. They had compliments going for him. So I suppose, like, it's hard as a sports people, and I think it's even harder for men at international level to kind of, like, put all the negativity aside and just, like, I suppose I channel my brain to just say, I'm here, this is me, this is my team, and it's my family. And outside of that, what everyone has got to say, I'm just like, you're not part of this, you're an outsider. I'm dealing with people, the things that I control, and the people who actually mean the most to me. And I suppose that's how I look at it, really, to try to kind of get out of the whole negativity zone.
You think as time moves forward, there will be, you know, the more and more popular ladies Gaelic football becomes, the more, you know, the players will be under the microscope of the pundits and the critics. Like, you know, it's part and parcel of popularity that you put yourself in a position where you're going to be susceptible to that kind of...
Yeah, 100%, I think, like, as a game, like, I think it comes in part and parcel with everything, like, with sports. Like, you are, if you're playing well... Obviously, if you play a bad game, you're going to be criticised. But it's, I suppose, personally, as a player, I think media are entitled to that as well. Like, it's their job, obviously, and they're entitled to go to the team and, like, criticise who they feel didn't play or perform up to the standard. So I think they have a right to that, and I don't see any issue in that whatsoever. But I think just talking from the players' point of view for themselves, I think that they just need to kind of have to channel your brain to just not think about it, or like just think the way I think of it is they're out there, they're not in got to do with me, they don't know me, I'm here in the team. Like my management know me, my family know me, the players know me, and you just kind of have to channel your brain away from that negativity. But I definitely think media are entitled to criticise, and as you said, with ladies football going on the up, like even this year in particular, the amount of journalists that were at the, I was at the Little League launch, the amount of journalists that was there actually stunned me. And I suppose there's more and more and more people going to get involved every year, especially
after all there for the free dinner, that was it.
Yeah, the free dinners, yeah. Pity there wasn't a few beverages after, so would have enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, we could have got up to dance away. Listen, Aisling, we'll have to do an Aisling Maloney, the sequel or part two, because we could go on forever. You know, she's the type of person that you're just fantastic to talk to, because you're very at ease, you're very honest, very modest, and you like a bit of banter as well.
Yeah, I suppose, look, I suppose, I think, as you probably all will aware, I love a good slagging, like, nearly take it too far at the time. But I suppose, look, even outside of sport and life, I suppose, look, everyone's dealing with their own situations in life. And I suppose if you wake up in the morning and take on the day and just say to yourself, everyone, be positive today about everything. And, like, no matter who you meet on the street and no matter who you meet in sport, like, we could go out in a game and meet a ref, and the ref could be the worst person in the world, but that man probably has to go home, or that woman has to go home to deal with some situation at home. So I suppose just outside of sport in general, I suppose just I don't know if I do come across as being positive, but I suppose myself, like, getting up in the morning, I could grunt about going to college, but why grunt? If why feed the negative thing if you can just feed the positive thing and get up and get on with the day, like, and get it over and done with. So I suppose that's how I kind of look at things. In that way, and I suppose having the banter and slagging is my kind of process in doing that, to keep me kind of happy and smiling, and keep my as they say, like, there's nothing that will put you in a good mood better than a smile and a laugh. So
exactly, that's it.
Yeah.
This year, Sports Girls have a new award. It's called the Piano Lifter, and it's a player that's a grafter, does so much work but mightn't get the recognition they deserve. Aisling, you're too famous, so you probably never get this award. So we're delighted to announce that our first winner is Donegal's Katie Herron. She is a midfielder and a complete workhorse. I don't know what Tom Brown has designed for an award, but delighted that we've given our first winner. And because we cover all the four divisions, we will look at the four divisions for players. So listen, thank you so much to our regular expert, Diana Hora, this evening, and our guest, Aisling Maloney. Definitely one of my favourite people to interview. You really are a breath of fresh air, Aisling. Not bad at the old football either, so keep that up. You might get somewhere, you might get to Crow Park someday. Right, we'll have no podcast next weekend, but we will be back the weekend of the 18th of March. So until then, slán go fóill.